Listen to the voices of our world.
Defense contractors have really been cashing in on the military spending boom.
The vision is to make sure, once again, that we have a healthy global economy that's not based on warfare.
The idea that CEOs are looking at these things as opportunities to make money is just plain wrong, and we need to demand that our government put an end to it.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Are you familiar with the term carpetbagger? Surely you saw Gone with the Wind. The term of contempt was coined in the aftermath of America's Civil War. It was used by Southerners to describe Northerners who had come down south to take advantage of their vanquished countrymen. Why carpetbaggers? Because these interlopers frequently carried their belongings in satchels made of carpet. War opportunism is hardly a new sin. We have laws that prevent a murderer from profiting from his or her crime, from, say, book or movie sales. Why then do we allow the justification for war to be tainted from the outset by the fact that certain corporations stand to make astronomical profits from the business of battle? We'll look at this issue today with Sarah Anderson, fellow from the Institute for Policy Studies, and then we'll discuss the moral consequences of how the United States chooses to spend its money with Jane Midgley, author of Women and the U.S. Budget, Where the Money Goes and What You Can Do About It. Forget about to the victor go the spoils. When it comes to war nowadays, the guys that outfit the victor, those are the guys who really clean up. Franklin Roosevelt committed American lives to the prosecution of World War II, only when he felt it had become inescapable. And then he vowed that war would not make any U.S. millionaires. That wisdom has not survived, however. Case in point, the CEO of DHB Industries, maker of bulletproof vests, David H. Brooks, made $70 million in 2004, up more than 13,000% from his, I guess, paltry 2001 salary of $525,000. Then Mr. Brooks sold off his company stock, pocketing $186 million, hurting fellow shareholders by sending stock prices down from $22 to $6.50. Meantime, Marines in Iraq found that the DHB bulletproof vests weren't exactly 100%, well, bulletproof. So they had 5,000 of the units recalled. Thus, David Brooks made more than $250 million on a piece of military equipment that has been recalled. And what of that contractor most often associated with our current presence in Iraq? Well, Halliburton CEO David Lassar got himself a 171% pay raise between 2003 and 2004. At the same time, government auditors were questioning $1.4 billion worth of bills the company charged the U.S. military. And it would take 3,634 years for an Air Force airman to earn the $88 million United Technologies CEO George David made last year, even though the company's largest government contract with the Pentagon for the Comanche helicopter has been canceled. You bet there's a pattern. Since 9/11, compensation for military contractor CEOs has risen 200%. Sorry to say, these facts, and so many more, are included in a report co-authored by United for a Fair Economy and the Institute for Policy Studies. The report is titled Executive Excess, 2005, Defense Contractors Get More Bucks for the Bang. Kathy Golden talks with Sarah Anderson, one of the authors of Executive Excess.
Sarah, there are a lot of disturbing things in this report. Can you tell us what you told Congress?
Well, we decided after doing a study on executive pay for about a dozen years now that it would be a good time this year to look at who might be benefiting from the conflict in Iraq at a time of such rising costs there, both in human and economic terms. And what we found is that CEOs of top defense contractors have really been cashing in on the military spending boom. We looked at pay for the CEOs of these top defense companies and compared what they were making back in 2001, so before the terrorist attacks, and then looking at last year. And what we found is that their pay had gone up about 200% compared to only about 7% for average large company CEOs. And what we found even more disturbing is the growing gap between the pay for these defense CEOs and the people who've been spending the conflict really on the front lines. We compared the pay of the CEOs first to military generals and found that whereas back in 2001 they were making about 12 times as much as a military general with 20 years of experience, by last year that had gone up to 23 to 1. It's, of course, a much bigger gap with the people at the bottom end of the military. We looked at CEO in defense companies pay compared to people like an Army private and found that in 2001 it was about 89 to 1, and last year it was up to 160 to 1.
So, as always, if you work for Halliburton but you're in a leather barca lounger back in the States, you're making an enormous sum of money, and if you are a private in the U.S. military, you are making bottom dollar.
That's the truth. I think that really spells out the inequality here, that these are men, and they were all men who were CEOs of these defense contractors, have spent the war really in the comfort of their executive suites, and the people who are taking the real risks are being paid only minuscule levels by comparison. And I think it sends the wrong message to those people on the front lines to see these CEOs really cashing in on war profits. And I also think it raises a very dangerous risk, which is that we could have an element of a profit motive for continuing this conflict. And I think that's something that no matter what your position is on the war, you should be concerned about.
Was there ever any other motive, do you think? And is there any truth to the fact that folks are saying with regard to Iraq now, it's been pointed out more than once that if jobs had been handed in the very beginning to the Iraqi citizens to rebuild their own country instead of handing those contracts over to American companies, Kellogg, Brown and Root, Halliburton and so on, there'd be less cause for an insurgency. You'd have people invested in rebuilding their own home country.
Well, I think there's merit to that argument, and I think there is no argument to be made that these private contractors have been doing a wonderful job over there. Take Halliburton, for example. They are, of course, the number one contractor in Iraq. They got contracts to do everything from oil field services to feeding food to the troops. And federal auditors have tallied up $1.4 billion in charges that Halliburton has made to the government that are dubious charges, that are not documented, that are fishy looking. And the fact that American taxpayers are spending all this money that's just going down the drain when, as you said, here was a country that had very educated population, that had built all this infrastructure to begin with, and why couldn't they have taken on those tasks?
Well, if you're charging $100 for a bag of laundry, that's that's beyond fishy. So where is the GAO in all of this?
Yeah. Well, the auditors have been, you know, putting out these very critical reports, but it just hasn't caught up to Halliburton yet. They continue to be operating in Iraq and qualifying for new contracts. And particularly outrageous, I find, is that they were really first in line to start benefiting from the hurricane here. The Navy has a contract with Halliburton in the U.S. The arrangement is sort of like they're on retainer in case there are disasters, and then they can come in and help repair Navy bases, in this case in Louisiana and Mississippi, that have been damaged by the hurricane. And I just find it outrageous that this is a company that has been doing such a bad job, really bilking taxpayers for billions of dollars in Iraq, and they're first in line to get benefits from the hurricane.
So, Sarah, while there is no upside to any natural disaster like Hurricane Katrina, Will the horrific sights that we've seen lately, that we've heard about on radio and on television, focus national sights on the invisibility of poverty in this country, poverty in that region?
We can only hope so. I think that this is a powerful, teachable moment. I think that the scenes that people have seen on TV should, without a doubt, help open people's eyes to the extreme inequality in this country. And I hope these people get the response that they deserve. I think that the hurricane has illuminated the inequalities. What our report is about is how the war has also illuminated such extreme inequalities in this country. And there are links. A lot of National Guard troops from that region were not there to help people in the wake of the hurricane because they were in Iraq. A lot of those people joined the Guard because of, you know, real financial pressures. And there's a divide between people who feel the need to join the military for financial reasons and those who can afford not to. Just as there was such an extreme divide between the people who could afford to get out of New Orleans and those other cities and those who could not. We have to have stronger government oversight over the private contractors who are dealing with Iraq. And now I think I'll expand that argument to say we need stronger government oversight over the private companies that have an interest in the aftermath of the hurricane. And we need that level of a crusade today to prevent war profiteering, to eliminate the risk that there's a profit motive behind this war, to eliminate the possibility that companies might profit off the horrors of the hurricane.
Sarah, what is the actual pay of a CEO and what is the actual pay of a private today?
Mm-hmm. Well, on average, the top defense CEOs that we looked at made about $11.6 million last year. An Army private in combat, so with extra combat pay, made $24,278.
I noticed you also gave out awards to various CEOs and companies, most notably for those who were excellent in the area of tax dodging and tax shelters, and also those who cook the books extremely well.
Yeah, what we're trying to do here is really bust this myth that what CEO pay represents is pay for performance, because there's lots of CEOs out there who perform miserably in terms of providing decent jobs and benefits for their workers, in terms of contributing to our tax base. And we looked at companies that have the biggest deficits in their worker pension funds, so ones that are really putting the economic futures of their workers at risk. And we found that they made almost double on average the pay in 2004 than average large company CEOs. And the Hall of Famer who we identified in this category is Lee Raymond, who's the CEO of ExxonMobil. That company had the second biggest deficit in their worker pension plan, even though they've had record sales and earnings, and Raymond was paid last year $82 million. And, you know, often when companies are in trouble, it's the government that really has to take over the obligation for these pension funds. So they're really avoiding their risk and taking risks without really backing it up. And the idea that CEOs are looking at these things as opportunities to make money is just plain wrong, and we need to demand that our government put an end to it.
Thank you so much for all this in-depth reporting. Sarah Anderson, thank you so much, Sarah.
My pleasure.
Should anyone be allowed to profit from war? Email us. Go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.